somebody says to you, hello. Now, if you're a philosophical materialist, that puts you in a great predicament. And what your conclusion at that moment is, well, I guess I didn't die. And this being assures you, oh, in fact, you did die. Now, depending on where you are in this chain of events, of births and deaths, depending on how old a being you are, let's forget higher and lower, let's just talk about older and younger. If you're a very young being, when you go out, you're very confused and it's all organized in terms of law as to which birth you'll take next, and you just hang around in a kind of a confused state until you're pummeled back into the next birth. But later, as you get more to be an older being, when you die, you say, oh, far out, right, that was only a birth. What do you know? I got caught again. And you look back and you see all these other beings who are doing the same trip, and you say, oh, you were my mother 40,000 births ago. Oh, yeah. And you begin to see that somebody who was your mother then is now your lover and your friend, your teacher. And you begin to say, gee, I knew I recognized you during life, and I didn't. Isn't that far out? And you see karmically what you've got to do the next round, and you sort of organize and you say, well, let's see, I ought to take birth to a lower middle class scene in a, you know, and then I ought to be raped when I'm 10, and then I ought to, you know, develop leukemia. That would be useful, right? See, because you want to really work through your karma. I mean, and you see from that point of view exactly which suffering is going to burn out. These are all fires that are purifying and awakening. And so the time comes from the birth, and you get ready, the parents are all organized, and see, and then you go, well, here I go, and see, and down in. And you go in, and then veil descends, and wah, and you're a baby again. See, and you think you're a baby, and they start saying you're a baby, and then you think you're a baby, and then there you are, see. And actually, beings enter in at different stages, so that some beings enter in at the moment of conception and some at the moment of birth. And the ones that enter in at the moment of birth, you can tell, because when the babies come out, they're like just stone. I mean, they don't know what in the hell has happened to them, because they haven't yet gone under, see. But it's like some old llama, you know, has been born in the Bronx and is sitting inside this body, you know, and he can't bless anybody because he can't get this mechanism to work, and he's completely, you know, and he's sort of in it and out of it. And some of them, blue babies, the ones that won't eat and stuff, they just leave. They say, nah, man, I can't cut this, and they go back, see. And we say, isn't that too bad, you know, like, see, we lost another one down here. From that perspective, your life's really interesting, see? Because when you can really understand how it's happening and the perspective of the game you're involved in, which is called the game of evolution of consciousness, or see, what happens is you go out separate and separate and separate until that despair develops, I told you about. And when that despair develops, the game flips over. And at that moment, you start to reach or look or surrender or say, well, I can't do it on my own. And that's in the middle of one of these births. It's like 10 million births later. You go through this one critical birth when you start to awaken. The minute you reach inward or outward. You can't phony it, by the way. You can't say, well, it's the thing to do, so I'll do it. It won't work that way. You can't do enlightenment. You can only become enlightened. But at that moment when you turn, that starts the whole journey home. That starts the turning of the screw, the turning of the cycle. And then all the rest of your births from then on are in the process of getting out of the illusion, while up until then you've been busy really digging your hole deeper. And it's only despair that flips the direction of it. So if you look at a clock, you went from 12 o'clock, which is the Tao or the unity, into 6 o'clock, which is the total despair, and then from 6 back to 12, it's the return. And these are all one set of incarnations, and these are others. And these are just older beings and younger beings. 9 o'clock's just older than 2 o'clock. It's not better, it's just older. And there's a cross-section at any time on this physical plane of beings of different ages of incarnation. And you'll often find that, say, your parent is a younger incarnation than you are. Because from an incarnational point of view, because of the amount of despair and opportunity in this culture at this moment, this is a very hip place for an old being to be born. More so than, say, in India, which is where it used to be like 50 years ago. Because they want now technology and worldly things. So that a lot of older beings are being born to younger beings. So you end up that you're older than, you've been around many thousands of times more than, say, a parent has been. Not in general, I mean, this is just, could be the other way around. In fact, your brothers and sisters are all different incarnations, too. You might have a brother who happens to be a full-blown saint in their last, at 1158, see, and you have another sister or brother who's like at about 225, you know. And you say, what a family we are. Now, in fact, it's really far out because none of it is random. This is the next part you'll find hard to buy. Because you can't imagine that anybody designed this mess. And in truth, the entire dance is so totally, exquisitely, lawfully interrelated that when you have awakened to your own predicament, you see that every experience you are having in this entire incarnation is the optimum teaching you need at that moment in order to awaken out of the illusion you're stuck in. If you want to use it that way. And if you don't, God bless you. It's just available to you. Nobody's coming on to you. Okay. You can treat it as, oh, God, am I suffering? Oh, did I go through a tough adolescence? I mean, I went through a tough adolescence, I'll tell you. I mean, me, personally, Ramdas. I was Dick then. Right? I mean, Dick went through a tough adolescence. He went through 5 years of psychoanalysis to get out of his tough adolescence. And then he was full of self-pity for his tough adolescence. Now I look back and I say, far out. If that hadn't have happened, then that wouldn't have happened. Then that wouldn't have... Oh, thank you. Wow. Whew, was that fantastic. Now that's a great awakening because at that moment... you recognize the thing that makes you think most mystics are nuts. And that is that suffering is grace. And that changes the whole meaning of your existence from day to day. That doesn't mean you go out and you say, give me suffering. I mean, it's not a masochistic trip. But when it's laid on you, you say, far out. Yeah, right. Okay, well, how will I work with this? Dying of cancer? Well, aren't you lucky? Wow. You know, that's heavy.
I can be lucky.
It scares you too much. It flips the meaning of it all around, doesn't it? I mean, I work with dying people, and I'm not the least bit interested that they're dying. I mean, everybody dies, so what's the big deal about that? I'm just... interested in working with people who would like to say, I'd like to use my death as a vehicle for awakening. Far out, let's work together. The recognition that you are the center of the universe, absolute center of the universe. Like, I am your karma at this moment. I'm merely stuff on your path. to be or to be or to be whatever it is that your karma allows you to do. And everybody in this gathering is digging it at a different level. Out of this group, maybe two people are going, ah, see? All the way out to, well, I don't know about that. See? And everybody's being honest, as honest with themselves as they know how to be. It's great. Older, younger, no blame. No blame. Compassion is to leave everybody else alone, by the way. Just stop coming on. I've seen it. You gotta see it. You gotta see it. I love you. You gotta see it. See? You can't do that. You can't do that. Compassion is to honor that it's not better to be 40 than 20. Just different. Compassion is to honor other people's journeys through the incarnation, even if they're deep in the illusion. You don't have to awaken them. What you have to do is to become awakened, and then you become a statement of what it is, and then those that are ready to awaken, awaken through your presence, whatever the form of your presence is. You could be walking down the street, you know, picking up papers with a stick and enlightening as many people as if you went around on the lecture tour. If you're enlightened, your vibration and your being will touch anybody that's ready to be touched when they come in contact with you. And if you're not awakened and free and out of the illusion, everything you do is just subtly perpetuating the illusion, no matter how nice a person you are. Because the horror for us good guys is that righteousness does not lead to truth. You can be good from now till hell freezes over and you're not going to get enlightened. Truth does lead to righteousness. But truth lies behind good and evil. Behind good and evil. Once that moment of awakening has started, the whole dance is literally change, and there's no way to go back to sleep for this incarnation or any more after it. And you will be dying to go back to sleep again. You'll be dying to do once more something where ignorance was bliss, where you were caught in the illusion totally, and you were getting another rush. You just want one more rush. Okay? One more rush. But in the middle of the rush, whatever it is, if it's eating pizza, right in the middle of the delicious part of the hot cheese, not too hot to burn the roof of your mouth, and perfectly crispy dough, perfectly seasoned, good mozzarella, and it's all just perfect, and you're just crunching it, and there's a voice inside saying, eating pizza. It's not judging you, it's not putting you down, it's not your superego, it's none of that stuff. That's all more head tripping. It's just awareness. Eating pizza, making love, getting educated, trying to get enlightened, despairing, depression. I'm depressed. Depression. See? Oh, I'm so blissed out. Bliss. See? That's far out. And so all of your trips, like depression trip, bliss trip, achievement trip, you know, sexual trip, all of your trips are just trip. See? And you begin to see that tripping isn't what it's about, whichever metaphor you want to use. That it's beyond tripping. Because every trip, you go up and you come down. And the game isn't high, getting high, or avoiding the lows. The game is developing, evolving your being until your being includes highs and lows and is absolutely perfectly equanimous, perfect equanimity, perfect awe, perfect awe. And around which the trips all occur. Here's the Ram Dass trip going down. See? That isn't who I am, it's just the Ram Dass trip. I'm no more the lecturer than I am the listener. It's just process going on. You're no more the listener than you are the lecturer. If you think you are, you're just completely lost in your trip. I'm the young student getting educated trip. Whatever trip. You take yourself so seriously. That's part of it. I'm a serious person. That's a trip. That's right. I don't take anything serious. That's a trip. You can become president. That's called a president trip. Now, is that profaning it? Is that making it irrelevant? No. Because in order to get finished, to be free, to get to 12 o'clock, to get awakened, if you just grab at that white light, at the void beyond the white light, if you just go for nirvana and you just end up in formless absolute, you have not done it in perfected truth. Because imperfected truth shows that no plane of reality is any more of anything than any other plane of reality. It's just another plane of reality. There are planes of bliss, there are hell lokas, there are hell planes, there's the earth plane. These are planes of reality and they're all relatively real. And a conscious free being honors all of them and clings to none of them. So that at this moment you are your body and you are your personality and you are your astrology and you are your soul and you are God and you are the void, and none of it is any more than anything else. It's just all true. And you live with the paradox that you're both this and not this. No clinging anywhere, no clinging. And in order to not cling, you can't push away anything, because if you're pushing away, you're clinging. So that you can't push away your incarnation at this moment, which means you've got to honor your whole trip. You've got to give it space. I pay my taxes, and I protest about things I don't believe in, that don't seem good for the culture. And I honor religions, and I honor human relations, and I love and honor my father. And every little reference group and all that is part of the flow of this incarnation, and I honor it all, and it all is empty. And at the same moment, it's full. And when you finally have the balance, the discipline, to not get so freaked out and fascinated about being God, that you forget that you're also woman or man. Or be so busy being woman that you forget you're God. The wisdom is that balance. The wisdom lies in balance. Not clinging here, not clinging there. Neither this nor that. Neither this nor that. The way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. No preferences. You don't cling to this or that. I can say, somebody says, what do you want for supper? And I say, well, what I'd really like is a parsley salad and a baked potato. Okay. We don't have any baked potatoes. Right. Now, how long will I spend the whole rest of the evening being miserable? See? And have a not baked potato dinner? See? Well, that's the same one as if you're going along healthy and suddenly you go to the doctor and the doctor says, I hate to tell you, but you've got cancer. You're going to spend the rest of your life being not healthy? Or are you going to say, okay, this is the givens, now we'll work with this. I'll go to a healer or a doc, whatever healing system you work in. You go to the healer and you attempt to get healed. If you're healed, fine. If you're not healed, okay. The game is not my but thy will, O Lord. Listening to the harmony, listening to the laws of the universe, not trying to outguess it all, but trying to hear the way in which your incarnation is unfolding. Hear the way it's unfolding. Honor it. Give it space. And at the same moment, keep emptying of those clingings and attachments. Depression, depression. Lust, lust. Growing old, growing old. Wanting, wanting. Fearing death. Ah, there's fearing death. Right? And always just quieting inside. Quieting. That's what meditation's about. Just quieting. Just cleaning away the clingings, the clingings, the clingings. So you don't get caught in your own intellect, your own mind. Because your mind will keep telling you who you think you are. And who you think you are is in fact not who you are. It's just who you think you are. You've been very patient. Once this framework, which is a framework, a model, which you'll have to give up sooner or later, it's merely a boat to cross the ocean of existence, but when you get to the other shore, you leave your boat behind, you don't carry it on your back. All methods are traps, but you allow yourself to be trapped in order to get free of other traps. Trying to get enlightened is a trap, and ultimately you must give up trying, but don't give up trying in the middle of the ocean or you'll drown. What is required is the effort on your part. There are two things. Let me just say one more little top, brief, quickie. The question of whether or not you have free will. You thought you came here today to hear Ram Dass speak. You decided to do it. You went and you read a sign. You said, oh, it's behind the mansion. And you thought and you did all kinds of things. That was choices you were making. And that, on that plane of reality, you have free will. You may intellectually know there are other planes, but forget that. There will be a time when you will enter into a plane of reality where all the law of the universe will be apparent to you. You may start through physics or through botany, and then pretty soon it'll broaden out until your own mind and your own life becomes lawful. And then you see that the way you decided to come here wasn't in a vacuum. That thought was part of that thought, which is part of that thought, which is all perfectly lawfully related. So in fact, you didn't have free will. It was all determined. It was all the unfolding of law. So there's two planes of reality, one where you have free will and one where you don't. They're both real. Neither one is more real than the other. They're both relative realities. If you keep going in this journey towards 12 o'clock, you get to the point where you are no longer attached to that which has karma, that which is in the chain of cause and effect, the laws of dependent origination. You're out of that. And at that moment, you are faced with one more choice. And that choice is whether to merge back into it all, or into God, or to stay separate. That's where what's called the Bodhisattva vow is a real vow in Tibetan Buddhism. And that moment is a moment of free will. That's 11:59. Now, if you come back to this one, the free will that got you here, at a certain moment when the despair is deep enough, you reach up and say, God, know me, or I want you, or I want to get out, or you say, I want to meditate, or I want to go behind all this, or I've got to get out of this, or you look through the veil, you stick your nose through the fence, and you look out and you say, far out. And all the time I thought this was reality. You've just blown your mind. And at that moment, that reaching out if it's in time, if it's karmically right at that moment. You may have done it 1,000 times before, but you pushed it away, ignored it. Everybody's had plenty of transcendent experiences. Most of the time, you've treated them as I went crazy, or you forget them, or you block them, you defend against them. But when you're ready, you open it up, and then you say, I want to get out. And that's the reaching. And that reaching starts a whole process, which is really the process of the descending of grace within the religious metaphor. And what that means is those beings who got to 1159 and chose not to merge, but to stay in form on this plane or any other plane, the only reason they did it was because of collective karma, not because of individual karma. The only reason they stay in form is because of your suffering. And that's what Christ pushes against the Father to merge as to manifest as the Son. That's the real sacrifice. The sacrifice of crucifixion isn't a sacrifice for a conscious being. Sure, you want my body? Take my body. Big deal. No, that isn't a sacrifice. Watch, I'll show you. I'll drop my body. If you don't believe that I'm more than my body, I'll drop it and I'll come back in 3 days. Want to see? Watch. I'll do it with my hands nailed up. Okay? It's no big deal. Suffering's grace. What am I going to do? Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Wow. Dad, here I come, you know. No, the sacrifice is in pushing away God and coming back into form, pushing away the merging, which is the pull of a billion suns of warmth and love and bliss and all of it, pulling you back in. Because this trip, as you go on and you get near 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, the pull gets like, it's like a huge vacuum sucking you back in. And you push against that and you stay in form. And what are you here for? In order to relieve the suffering of others through that light pouring through you of liberation. And that's why you honor gurus and you honor spiritual high teachers. And those beings look around as Buddha did at 4:30 every morning. They look out as Buddha looked out over the Buddha fields to see who was ready to be enlightened. Meaning who had the hand up. See? Saying, hey, me. That's free will at this level. And at that point, the grace descends because those beings, see, the predicament is that back where it all is in the law, there is no time. So you could say that God does not live in time. And therefore, God doesn't care how soon you come home. He's not saying, now be sure you get in by midnight. Okay. God doesn't care, but you care, because you're in time. God isn't in time. Another 10 million incarnations, what difference does it make? Because nothing happened anyway, if you'll pardon the flip of realities. But every time you start a reach, then these beings will not go against the will of God, but they will go in harmony with the will of God when man's will goes towards that. Then they'll push. Otherwise, they'll leave you alone. They'll leave you alone like poison. They won't touch you. You don't want them. They don't want you. Nobody's coming on to you. Nobody's going to save you. You can't be saved. You can only save yourself. But the minute you start to save yourself, the whole thing starts. And there's nothing you can do out of your head, Tribune, and say, well, I ought to be saved, because most everybody that we know in the West at this moment doesn't want to be liberated. They want to be liberated. Okay? That's a really neat place. You can play that one out for thousands of incarnations. I'm really working on being liberated. See? But the minute it starts to happen, you know, God, like Carl Jung said, oh, he was so happy in his dreams, memories, and reflections after these experiences to get back home with my wife and family. Like, it's great, but I want reality. No, it's very fierce. Pure God, raw God, God truth is really, really horrendous. Because it's very indifferent, and it's very tough, and it's very, very impersonal. And it's all perfect. It's all perfect, including what happened in Vietnam, including what happened in Cambodia and Bangladesh and Biafra, and in the with persecution in our country, it's all perfect at that level. And when you have that balance to live with that kind of truth, of looking out at somebody suffering and being destroyed in front of you and saying, that's perfect, and at the same moment having your caring fully open, your heart, the blood of the Christ on the snow, the blood pouring out of you, so that you're at the same moment doing everything you can in your incarnation to relieve the suffering of all beings. That paradox, the perfection of it and the relief of it, that balance, that's the balance. But if you get too busy being merciful and you lose sight of the truth, all you're doing is digging the hole deeper for suffering for everybody. That's why you work on yourself until you are that truth, and at the same moment you are there for the relief of suffering of all beings. That balance, that is consciousness. And in that perfect form is perfect freedom. That is what, as far as I'm concerned, education's about. And that has nothing, everything you're doing, there's nothing that I have said that implies that you have to change one action you're doing in life. I'm not implying drop out. I'm not implying irresponsibility. I'm not implying you go to a cave. You're not going to get any higher there than here. What I'm saying is wherever you are is where the teachings are if you know how to use them. If you don't know how to use them, you could be sitting with at Christ's feet on the mountain, and you just go to sleep. If you're neurotic in New York, you'll be neurotic in Chicago. And if you're ready for God in New York, you'll be ready for God in the Himalayas or New York, and you can get to God in New York City just as fast as you can get there in the Himalayas. In fact, New York is a hell of a lot hotter, and you'll probably go faster if you really want it. Because the only reason you push away New York, say, oh God, I can't make it in New York, I've got to get out to the country, is because it fans those places in you which you don't like. Believe me, if you didn't want anything, New York would be like a Himalayan ashram retreat. See? Because if your eyes are only flicking on souls, you walk down, it's just a place full of souls and light. But if you've got those other little places in you, New York will do it to you. Because it's saying, hey, come on, come on, hey. Once more around, come on. Little, one more trip, one more rush, come on in. 50 beautiful girls, come on, one more trip. So you hate it because you hate those places in yourself because you're not fully honoring your being. Okay. It's 7:30. See? Boom. See, none of these words, this is very far, I mean, this is really a far one. None of the words I'm saying have anything to do with anything. This is just keeping your mind cool while the process goes on. You're being done anyway. You've just been had, whether you know it or not. Okay? Because the transmission is a transmission of vibration or energy or being, and I'm just transmitting my being. I'm not even doing it, it's just happening. We are all just getting our karmuppance at this moment. Okay? And if you... The best thing you can do is not remember a thing I said. Because if you collect it, that means you weren't ready to know it anyway. Anything you were ready to know I said, you will say, yeah, right, of course, I know that. And anything you're not, you say, gee, I got to remember that. It's just pushing you further away. Forget it. Isn't that weird? Seems like the opposite direction, isn't it, from the way you usually think. because my mind, even between sentences, is absolutely totally empty. Isn't that far out? Just empty. Stuff just comes out. I'm not sitting saying, I think I'll tell him that. You know, in the old days, I used to drive with a clipboard on my leg to write down my ideas, and I'd think so many hours a day, and I always was thinking all the time. So I was never here. But now if my mind's empty, yet I'm obviously the thoughts are available, the stuff comes out in sentences and constructs and, you know.
Yesoda ke balam navanite chora gopalam chitta chora yesoda ke balam navanite chora gopalam chitta chora yesoda ke ba navanit chora gopa
chora
phone call to J.R. Rushing at Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The date, December 20th, 1975. Recognize your voice at first.
Oh, is this I didn't recognize yours.
Yeah, Gathings up in New Jersey.
What's cooking?
Oh, I don't know.
Coming down for Christmas?
No, I can't make it this year.
Oh, sure.
I called up because I figured maybe you'd be there now because you usually have a meeting on Saturday nights.
Yeah, there are a couple of fellows here now.
Yeah.
Beck and Stan Bartlett from up there. Up the coast there, please. I forget the name of that city.
Yeah.
So what's new up there?
Well, nothing much with me. I mean, I'm still working where I am.
Well, that's good. I was wondering what happened to you. I know you don't write much.
No, instead of writing, I decided to call you up.
Well, it's a welcome thing. It's a little more expensive, though.
Yeah.
So I'll consider it a Christmas present.
Yeah.
How's the family?
Okay.
And, I hear the dog barking.
No, it's somebody tearing tape here.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, what made you give up the manager's job? I thought that was an easy job.
Oh, it was an easy job, but no money in it. See, I took the job because of my... I was dizzy all the time.
Yeah.
And I got over it, I guess, by not working hard. And then I discovered that when I started to work, I got dizzy again. So I discovered that it's low blood pressure.
Oh.
So I've been taking different tablets and vitamins and vitamin B6 and... So I'm all right now. As long as I take those vitamins, I seem to be all right.
Oh, that did it then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So far. So, making more money now, of course, painting than this. Yeah, there's no money in the job. But that's $100 a month, that's all, when they're in the apartment. That figures out to about $60 a week or something, doesn't
it? Yeah. Well, is there anything new on the economic situation?
Oh, yeah, just about everything is going down. I can tell you about 90-some-odd banks have failed this year.
Mm.
And at least 5 insurance companies in Florida alone have failed this year.
Okay.
And railroads are failing. The government is having to pump billions into the railroads. Airlines are failing.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, all the small businesses are having a struggle.
Yeah, I know. And some of the cities and states are cutting back on their payroll, laying people off.
Yeah.
So it's coming on gradually.
Yeah. Well, remember Scott told me the last time I was up there, and I saw him in 69, is that they were in the last stages, that when their back is to the wall, they'll have to automate. And when they do, it'll go fast, he said.
Yeah.
Because I didn't try to pin him down. After all, he couldn't give me a bus schedule. But 75 has been a rocking, reeling year.
Yeah.
Stan Bartlett got a newspaper clipping from San Francisco, where his newspaper reporter interviewed McCaslin.
Yeah.
That's one of the speakers. You know that, don't you? McCaslin?
Yeah, I know of him.
Yeah, he's been speaking ever since I can remember, back in the 40s. So it's quite a long article, and it's a very good... I'm going to try and get it photostated. It's pretty big. It's 9.5 inches wide, I think, and 11.5 long.
Yeah.
So, if I can get it to any place where they'll photostat it, I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, that's good. Well, is he making any predictions in it?
No, except that it's going down.
Yeah.
He went into a few details about how bad the things are up in Canada and the Northwest. The paper mills have shut down, you know, and all the different kind of businesses up there that operate. It must be pretty bad around in Western Canada and state of Washington, I guess Oregon.
Yeah.
There's a lot of states that hit worse than others.
Yeah.
Florida has been hit very bad for unemployment. We're just lucky that we're able to keep... We've been busy all the fall, I don't know.
You've got plenty of painting jobs, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We got in a couple of condominiums, and we just get recommendations from one to the other.
Well, how is the construction industry? Is that going down more?
It's dead.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
Hardly any left. Miami is just dead.
Okay.
All that big boom that was going on here is all stopped. There's empty buildings standing around everywhere, half finished.
Oh, gee. You mean they have buildings half finished and they just stopped, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mortgage money stopped, you see.
Yeah.
So, and the ones that are finished, the apartments are empty.
Hmm. Well, there is something interesting here. Of course, I know maybe you didn't pay any attention to this. I don't know whether they know what they're talking about or not. But, you know, the National Caucus of Labor Committee is really going wild here lately.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they say that the Rockefeller Group and Kissinger are moving towards nuclear confrontation with the Soviet Union. That'll probably come off in February. They said we're in great danger of being destroyed completely by February. And they've got a big headline on one of the newspapers here. I've never seen anything like this.
It says Rocky plans Ford's assassination. It's according to them, Ford is scheduled to be bumped off by the end of January.
Well, I would say I wouldn't put too much stock in this stuff.
That's to make Rockefeller president, then, automatically. But I mean, can you imagine a newspaper printing a headline accusing the vice president of plotting to murder the president?
I don't see how they get away with it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I can't figure that. That really takes the cake.
Well, you know what it is. They know that the president or vice president or anybody else is not going to attack them because that would just give them publicity.
Yeah.
That's why they treat it like they do technocracy.
Yeah. Well, they say that the whole structure within a matter of weeks is going to start collapsing fast. The whole debt structure, not only in this country but worldwide. And he says that Rocky and the big boys know that, and they're moving towards nuclear confrontation with the Soviet Union for that reason.
They'd rather have suicide than to go into technocracy.
No, you see, the idea is that they can't make fascism work unless they get control of the entire world, as long as the socialist countries exist.
It'll be the destruction of both of everybody if they start it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, can't they see that?
Yes, but they've gone insane completely, according to New Solidarity here. That they're out of their minds. And they have to get control. In other words, they have to get control of the Soviet Union and all the socialist countries, the entire world. You see, what they'd have to do, and then reduce the population and freeze the people to the land and restrict technology. But they can't do that unless they get control of the Soviet Union.
Well, if they start any nuclear war, the Soviet Union will have just as good a finish of it as we do.
Well, according to the story in here, they've been feeding information for years on the Soviet leadership into a computer system, what they call the RAND computer system. And they get answers out of the computer, and according to them, the computer says that if they push the Soviet Union, keep pushing them, they'll keep backing down, see, and won't go to war.
So they believe it, huh?
But Lynn Marcus of the Labor Committee says that isn't true. He says what will happen is when you reach a certain point in pushing them, he says they'll suddenly go out with an all-out attack on the North American continent and completely annihilate us.
Yeah, one way or another.
Yeah. And he says we're in great danger right now unless we get rid of these crazy guys, see?
Well, that's one way to try and get rid of them.
Huh?
If you get rid of them, though, you'll just get a new set.
Well, possibly. Yes, but if you get rid of them, you may throw things into confusion, and before they can reorganize with a new set again, it'll be all over, see? The system will be down.
That might be one way to look at it.
Yeah. But they give a very impressive argument. I can't go into the whole thing here because it runs for pages in a number of papers, a number of issues here.
It sounds about like them, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they really go off the deep end, though, so I don't know whether they're correct or not. But I have known for many years that when the system is finally pushed to the wall, we are in danger of nuclear war.
Yeah. Well, I think that they know that if they start anything, both sides will be finished. Maybe they'd rather commit suicide than to give up.
Yeah, they'd rather destroy everything than to allow social change to happen, see?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to watch until the bomb hits.
Yeah.
Of course, the Soviet Union has got enough submarines out there plowing around through the waters to take care of the continent.
Well, the only thing is, it would end up, I guess, with both sides destroying each other, that's all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, if anything like that happens.
Then they can start all over again, maybe, if there's anybody left.
There might be a few people left, I've heard, down in the southern hemisphere, that's below the equator. Some people left down there. But all of us up here would be finished.
Well, they wouldn't be able to come up here for their lifetime.
No, because of the radioactivity, yeah. So, they're really alarmed. They're spreading this information all over the country, issuing special leaflets and everything, and all over Western Europe. This plan, they call the it's a It's called Hilux 75. And they claim the plant has been in operation since last spring or early last summer, something like that. And it's supposed to end, the Hilux 75 plant is supposed to end with a nuclear confrontation with the Soviet Union in February, probably.
What is the name of that organization again?
The National Caucus of Labor Committees.
Oh, that's quite a name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't put too much stock in it. You know, they were wrong there in a number of things they were predicting.
I know. In the spring of 73, I think it was, they said at that time we had about 90 days to go until the collapse of international credit.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
No, they're not on the beam all the time.
Because I've been reading their papers for several years, and I noticed that they sort of, in their predictions, they're sort of jumping the gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're a little ahead of things, I think.
They might be right in one sense, but they're, as you say, jumping the gun too early.
Yeah.
I don't think that anything much will happen until, well, maybe sometime in 76.
Yeah.
That would be ironic that the thing goes down at exactly on the 200th year.
Yeah, on the anniversary, yeah.
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 When do you think it might come down?
Oh, gee, I don't know at this time when I'll come down. I could take an earlier vacation in 76 maybe and come down.
Well, be glad to see you.
Because I have enough time in so I can get a 3 weeks vacation every year.
Well, you want to come down before the bombs start dropping.
Yeah. Well, if the Labor Committee is right, we'll all be dead in February. We might be.
Well, we won't have anything to worry about.
Yeah. This might be the last time I'll be talking to you then.
Well, if they're both dead, it won't make any difference.
Yeah.
We might be traveling together to another world.
They also say that there's going to be the unemployment's going to start going up fast right after the first of the year. With a lot of shutdowns and layoffs.
It don't take much of a prediction to see that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of things that's going on in stores now, all that will suddenly stop and there'll be huge layoffs all over.
And the people, of course, that are really beginning to get hit now are government workers, see, in states and cities.
Yeah.
As they cut back on the budgets.
Yeah, there's great masses of people is on the federal and payroll and on state payroll,
yeah.
And county, cities, and they can't collect enough taxes to keep the thing going.
And the funny part of it is when they lay these people off, they still got to take care of them. That costs them money.
Yeah.
If they go on relief or anything, see?
It's a one-way street, no matter how they turn.
So they can't save very much on the budget by laying people off.
And the Congress now won't let them go into Angola. They'd like to start another war.
Yeah. I think some of the congressmen are afraid it's going to be another Vietnam all over again.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Well, they'd be glad to do that. They could, if they had some place, but then they run out of natural resources.
Well, the debt structure's getting so high now that maybe they can't finance another war like that, see?
Yeah, yeah. The inflation wipe out too many people.
I think that possibly, you see, Len Marcus says that by February they can't turn over the debt again. It's too big now. In other words, they can't cover the interest and everything and turn it over.
They can't sell enough bonds to keep it going.
And he says that it'll probably crash by then. But I have an idea that what they might do, he might be mistaken. They may be able to put it off a little longer by just printing money. You see, but you know what I mean? It's the same thing as making counterfeit money.
Yeah.
Just printing money to turn over the debt, but that'll cause a more rapid inflation, man.
Well, you remember that Scott said when he was on his deathbed?
Yeah.
That he couldn't see how it could go beyond 1975.
Yeah.
So he might be off a couple of months. So it's quite possible.
Well, even if he's off a year, what difference does it make?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But it really looks like things are really going to start popping next year, though.
They're popping now. They're going to pop more, I think, as time goes on.
Yeah.
Well, if things get too bad, grab an armful of boxcars and come on down.
Well, if it looks like the wise thing to do, I don't know.
Well, as long as your job holds out, you can stick around.
So
I guess it's too late to sell the house.
Yeah.
How's your mother?
Well, she's still running around. She's getting pretty old, though.
And her paramour?
Huh?
Her husband?
No, he's still, he's in bad shape, but he doesn't go out of the house hardly at all anymore.
They're liable to outlive both of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know this is going to cost you money, so it's up to you now how long you want to talk.
Yeah.
I appreciate your calling, and it's been pleasant.
Yeah.
And, we've exchanged some of our information.
Well, it's possible I might be able to get down to see you, I don't know, this spring,
yeah,
sometime.
Yeah.
I might take an early vacation in 76, the first part of the year.
You can't get a vacation in winter, huh?
You don't put in your application. The applications are all in by March, I think, or 1st of March or something like that. I've forgotten now when it is. So if I take an early vacation, it might be April or May, something like that, around that time.
Yeah, well, that's when everything opens up north.
Yeah.
How's the oil? Is that price of oil there beating you down?
I don't know exactly what the price is right now. If Jean was here, I could ask her. But I think it's hitting us for about $150 a month in the cold weather.
That's probably more than you get for the apartment downstairs, too.
No, we're getting a little more than that now.
Yeah. Well, then you're not too bad off.
I think we're getting around $200, something like that now for it.
So all you have to do is pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
How much is that?
That's about the mortgage and the insurance. And everything is about $180 a month, yeah.
That's pretty stiff, too, for one family. Is there more than one working now?
Yeah, there's several people here working right now, yeah.
Oh, well, then you're lucky that your children grew up before it could swamp you.
Yeah. Well, that's not a lot today on a mortgage. Most people today are paying maybe between $200 and $300 a month, you know, mortgage on a house with everything.
Yeah, and some of them are getting unemployed in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Now things are getting rough, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get back out then to the meeting. I don't know what's going on out there. I guess they're waiting for me.
No.
I'm glad to hear from you. And if you can come down, I'd be glad to see you.
Okay, I'll see if I can get down this spring, late this spring, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, so long.
So long now.
Yep.